Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the Rockcast. I am your host, Monty Colvin.
A very weird guy.
I want to start out the show by thanking everyone who has ordered the new Rockcast t-shirts.
Huh?
That's right. If you haven't heard, they are now available at my website, MontyColvin.net.
These are things that are incredibly popular.
And it's funny because I have people tell me all the time, Monty, I love the show, but I just feel so bad being able to download it for free. And I just wish there was something I could do to give a little back. Well, now here's your chance to relieve yourself of all that guilt. And not only will you be spreading the word about the best podcast in the history of mankind, you'll also own a cool t-shirt.
Hey, there you go.
And if I can sell enough of these things, it's starting to look like I might just be able to recover the money that I spent on the printing of these t-shirts in the first place.
Clearly, this is going to be an enormous success.
Yeah, so I got that going for me. And so thanks to everyone who has ordered so far, and all I can say is keep the orders coming.
Hundreds of millions of dollars are at stake here.
All right, enough with the commercials. Let's get it going with some Rockcast feedback. It's always great hearing from you guys, and I like getting feedback on what I'm saying and what I'm playing. And on the last episode, I told you that I had heard from an old friend of mine from college named Stu. And since then, Stu has written me several times and given me ideas for the show. He's given me questions and just some overall opinions. And Stu's only been listening for a short time, but he said, I'll be honest, Monty, I've known you for a long time, and I know you're not a racist, but sometimes on the show you kind of sound like you are.
That's right.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, Stu, because it'll give me an opportunity to explain how I really feel. No, I am not a racist, and I am not a homophobe. I am not afraid of gay people, nor do I hate anyone because of the color of their skin. However, I am prejudiced against people who are acting like a-holes. And when it comes to that, I don't care if you're white or black. And the people I probably hate more than anyone are the scumbags in the media. Because to me, they're the ones promoting racism more than anybody.
What's going on with that?
I am so sick of the agendas and the political correctness being forced down my throat every single day. And little by little, I just see everyone becoming brainwashed. Because they've heard it over and over on TV, and they've seen it on the internet, and the teachers are teaching it at public school now. And after a while, we've painted ourselves into a corner, and we can't say anything about anybody or anything. We just have to accept it all and be tolerant. It's a great way to control people, and this isn't something that just happened overnight. For instance, let's take the whole gay and transgender issue that's been in the news here lately. When I was a kid, if somebody was gay or they were a cross-dresser, they kept it quiet. And they were looked down upon as being a freak. But then we were told, no, they have their rights like anybody else. And then as the years went on, I was told, you know, they're not only equal, they're special. And then flash forward to today with the whole Bruce Jenner thing. And it's transgenders are not only normal, but they need to be applauded because they are more courageous than our war veterans. And if you do not think this way or share this opinion, you are an idiot and a total slime ball. And that's where I gotta draw the line and say, kiss my ass. Nobody's going to tell me what I have to believe or how to think.
You're intolerant.
On the other hand, do I care if Bruce Jenner wants to pretend he's a woman? No. And if it wasn't constantly shoved in our faces by the media, I don't think anyone would care. But he's going to get a lot of attention for this, and you watch, he'll probably get his own reality show. And he will make millions of dollars because the media will promote him.
Why?
Why? Because the liberal media has an agenda. And for some reason, they want to break down the image of the masculine male. I mean, all you've got to do is watch a commercial or a sitcom. All the wives and mothers are always portrayed as very smart and noble, got it together. And the dads and husbands are complete dumbasses.
Duh!
But all that to say, I don't hate blacks, I don't hate gays, or Bruce Jenner. But I will not let the media or the president or somebody on Facebook tell me who to admire. So I hope that kind of clears things up, Stu. No, I am not a racist.
You don't have any proof.
And to prove this, I have come up with my own top 10 list.
Oh, okay.
You see, over the years, I have had many friends who were black, and a lot of my heroes have been black. And so here now is a list of my favorite blacks.
So what?
Number 10, Hall of Fame guard from the San Antonio Spurs, George the Iceman Gervin. Number 9, Jimi Hendrix. Number 8, Reggie Jackson. Number 7, Dr. J. Julius Erving. Number 6, Marty Johnson.
Who's that?
Well, I better explain this because Marty is not that well known, but he plays bass in Crunchy when we do live gigs, and he is just the nicest guy you will ever meet.
I know it's the truth!
So he is favorite black number 6, and at number 5 is Alan Page. And if you've never heard of him, he was a lineman for the Minnesota Vikings back in the 70s. And I think he was like my first sports hero. And I used to write all my heroes letters and see if they'd send me an autograph, and he was one of them that did. And another guy that wrote me back was number 4, Andre Crouch. And he was a black gospel singer that I liked when I was about 14. And I wrote him, and he wrote me back a really nice letter, and I'll never forget that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that brings me to number 3, and it's Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy. And he was not only black, but he was Irish. So I think I should get bonus points for that, because I'm covering 2 bases. The blacks and the Irish.
I'm not really buying that.
Now, number 2 on my list should not surprise people because it's Doug Penick from King's X. And I know just about everybody thinks that Doug is their best friend, but I have known him for over 30 years, and I just love that guy, and it has nothing to do with King's X. He's got one of my favorite bass tones of all time, and I respect him as a musician. But when I was in college, we'd just hang out and listen to music and go to movies, and he'll just always be my bud. But at number 1 and my favorite black of all time, it's Connie Hawkins.
Who the hell is that? I don't even know.
I know you've probably never heard of Connie Hawkins, but that's okay. Because you see, when I was a kid living in Phoenix, Arizona, my dad would take me to see the Phoenix Suns. And Connie Hawkins became my favorite basketball player ever, and I just worshiped the guy. I would try to emulate all of his moves, and if he wore tape on his fingers in a game, I would tape mine the next day. And he would palm the ball in one hand, and he'd wave it around, and he was doing all those swooping through the air dunks before we'd even heard of Dr. J. And one night after a Suns game, I was about 12 years old, and I walked back by the locker rooms, and I waited, and he finally came out, and he signed an autograph for me. And I thanked him, and as I was walking away, I just kind of took my arm and rubbed it against his jacket. And the only reason I did that was so I could say I had touched the great Connie Hawkins, my number 1 favorite black.
Dude, you're
are so racist.
All right, before I get back to more listener feedback, Stu had a couple of questions for me. And the first one was, hey, Monty, do you think more chicks like metal or punk rock?
Interesting question, isn't it?
Well, man, I'm going to say metal. I wrote a song called Vicky the Punk, but most of the girls I've known over the years weren't really into punk. And I'm married to a metal chick now, and when we go to shows to see these new metal bands like Of Mice and Men, they draw big crowds of mostly kids, and a lot of them are chicks. But I remember back in the late 80s, you had all those slutty-looking girls going to see Bon Jovi and Poison, and every metal video had to have some hot babe in it. But I think most of those chicks were just into guys with long hair. And a lot of that went away when grunge came along.
Thank God for that.
Stu's next question was, what was the ratio of male to female in the usual Galactic Cowboy crowd?
These are not hard questions.
Well, Stu, we did a lot of shows over the years. We played for thousands and thousands of people. And we opened for bands like King's X, Dream Theater, and Anthrax. And if I were to take a wild guess, I don't know, I'm guessing it would be somewhere around, maybe 98% male.
Ah!
Yeah, I'm kind of being liberal on that 2% female number there because it could have been less than that.
How sad.
You see, unless they were dragged there by their boyfriends, there just weren't many girls there at all. And that was really kind of a shame, because after all, we were rock stars. And you'd think somewhere along the line you'd get some flying panties or flashing boobies. But no, it never happened. For the most part, all I saw was guys standing there looking at my fingers, trying to figure out what I was playing. And after the show, they'd come up to me and tell me about their band and then give me a demo tape. And that's pretty much the way it was being in Galactic Cowboys.
That, to me, is tremendously exciting.
Okay, moving on to some other feedback. It appears that a whole lot of you did not like the Bret Michaels country album that I reviewed. In fact, Patrick in Minnesota and Kevin in New York both thought the Bret Michaels CD was really bad, and Patrick said, that album was god-awful.
It sucks!
Well, I'm really sorry I did that to you guys, and all I can say is I will promise to try and never do that to you again.
Now, does anybody believe that?
I also heard from Phil Robinson in Tennessee, who said he loved the last show, and he can relate to my bad eating habits. And he, too, says that he likes candy, and that he's even been known to eat a chicken gizzard.
Yeah.
Well, that is awesome, Phil. I really appreciate the email, and it's also very encouraging to know that I'm not the only guy who, as he gets older, is gonna have some health problems.
You're gonna die!
Now, Phil also agreed with everyone else and said the new Bret Michaels CD is horrid. And he said, what's the deal with all these guys jumping over to country music? I mean, even Steven Tyler is doing a country album now.
That's crazy!
Well, Phil, in my humble opinion, the answer to that is easy. It's money. That market is huge, and I guess why not? If you can make a buttload of cash off of doing some hokey country songs, you do it.
I heard that.
And it seems like the country music audience is just more open to things these days. Maybe it all started with Garth Brooks doing these rock and roll style concerts. But you'll hear guys rapping in country songs now. And the other night I saw this band on TV called Georgia Florida Line or something like that. Florida Georgia Line. And they had this guitar player over to the side, and he had a mohawk. And part of me went, oh, okay, I guess that's cool. And the other part of me went, oh, dude, if you only knew how unpunk rock you are.
Yep.
But yeah, even Steven Tyler is going country now, and the album isn't out yet, but I just happen to have a song.
Tell me all your stories.
Well, first of all, let me just say, I hate that. And it's not because it's a country song, because the only thing country about that is the banjo. Outside of that, that sounds like the same thing he's been doing for the last 25, 30 years. But he is a great singer, and he's got an instantly recognizable voice, and I'm sure he'll do quite well in country music. But if I never hear the rest of that album, that will be awesome. But getting back to some of your questions, I got an email recently from Dr. Nathaniel Hansen, PhD.
How can this happen?
Oh yeah, even smart people listen to the Rockcast.
I say no, there's no way.
And Dr. Nate says, "Hey Monty, as a professor, I'm always curious what my students recall about me long after the class is finished. And my question is, what do you recall about your best and worst professors? What made him or her awesome or awful?"
You don't know, do you?
Well, that's a good question, Dr. Nate, because when I was in college, it was kind of a growing experience for me. I was trying to figure out who I was as a person and what I wanted out of life. And I was used to my parents telling me everything I did was great, and so when I first got to college, it was kind of a jolt of reality. I was from a relatively small town in Missouri, and when I got to the University of Southwest Missouri State, I was one of thousands, and my professors didn't care who I was, and they weren't impressed in the least with me. And I'll never forget my first drawing class. I'm in there, and I don't even remember what it was we were drawing. But I got it done, and the teacher walked by, and I said, "Hey, what do you think?" And she just looked at me and laughed and went, "It's okay." And I didn't really like her much, but she put me in my place, and that was good for me.
This is an extremely interesting story.
Of course, I've changed so much since my days in college, and back then, I didn't care anything about politics. But to get my degree, I had to take political science, and I had this nerdy professor, and I couldn't stand the guy. Because he was so boring, and I'd just sit there drawing pictures of him in the class instead of taking part in the discussion or anything. But I was 19 back then, so all I was thinking about was rock and roll and girls. And it took me a couple years to grow up and figure out that, hey, if I'm going to get good at anything, I'm going to have to work at it. And so I started going to the paint lab at night and working for hours on my paintings. And by year three or four, I started improving. And my senior year, I took this printmaking class, and the professor's name was Rodney Frew. And he was the coolest guy, and I loved the way he would draw. That's right, I loved the way Frew drew. And he'd bring in some of his drawings and show us, and a couple of them were of his wife, and they were nude. And I'm like, how cool is that? And just being in there gave me this excitement and freedom about art. And my buddy Stu was in that class with me, and we were just doing this crazy, sometimes hilarious stuff. Interestingly enough, though, a few weeks before I graduated, Mr. Frew took me over to the side, and he was looking at some of my pictures and prints. And he said, "How many hours of drawing have you had?" And I said, "About 18. And he goes, "Wow, somebody really went wrong somewhere." Yeah, he basically told me I sucked at drawing. And I was mortified, and I turned and started to walk out of there, and he said, "Keep your head up, Monty." And I said, "It's hard." And he said, "I know it is." And I never forgot that, and from then on, I continued to work my ass off to prove him wrong. I didn't just give up, and I think that's a good lesson. Praise and encouragement are all well and good, but sometimes you just need someone to give you a kick in the butt. It drives me crazy to see kids these days just expect everything to be handed over to them. It just makes me want to say, for the love of God, get off of Facebook and stop staring at your phones. Because if you want to do something with your life, you're probably going to have to put out some effort.
We don't need lectures from you, you jerk.
Okay, I may have gotten off topic there, but those are some thoughts about my days in college. So thank you, Dr. Nate, for the question. But anyway, moving on to other emails. I know a lot of you guys listening are in bands, you're musicians, and I've gotten several messages here lately from some of you who have expressed your frustration in finding new guys to play with. Whether it be you're trying out somebody for your band or you're trying out for somebody else's band. And recently I got a message from Mark Burris in Dayton. And Mark was telling me his frustrations when he was trying out for a band where he lives. And he said he showed up on time, but everybody else was late. And then when they finally got around to practicing, he knew the songs better than they did. And Mark said after the practice, he had decided that he didn't want any part of them. But the funny thing was is that they called him the next day and said, yeah, you're not the right fit for us. Yeah, well, don't feel bad, Mark. Just consider yourself lucky that you didn't waste any more time playing with them. Because I'll tell you, I've dealt with my share of local musicians, and most of them are completely clueless. And a lot of them are just downright delusional, and they have no idea what it takes to make it or how to be successful. And I'll give you an example. Back around 99, when I moved back to Kansas City, I'd written a bunch of stuff for my first Crunchy album, and I wanted to find some guys to play it live with. And when I started looking for drummers, I tried out about 10 or 11 of them, and only one or two were good at all. And I'll never forget this one guy. I'd given him a tape with about 10 demo songs on it, and he comes in, he sets his drums up, and we play through one song, and it wasn't great. But I'm thinking, well, I'll give him a chance, you know? So I go, okay, what do you want to do next? And he just looks at me and goes, you know, I'm not going to shit you. I don't know the songs. And I just thought to myself, then why did you show up and waste my time? Because if you're not going to show up prepared for a tryout, I know you're not someone I want to be in a band with. So needless to say, he did not become the drummer for Crunchy. But drummers are just a weird breed. I mean, musicians in general are strange and full of themselves, but drummers are a whole nother thing. And here's a true story for you. The first guy I ended up picking as the drummer for Crunchy, well, he lasted about two practices, and then he just disappeared. One night I went to practice, and he just never showed. And the bizarre thing is that he just left his drums. And I ended up just having to move the drums out of the way and get another guy in there. But about a year later, I finally heard from him. And he sent me an email and said, yeah, sorry about that. I had to leave town and I can't talk about it.
And that's when you realize how goofy this story is.
So yeah, I've had a few bad experiences with local musicians, but I've also had some good ones. I guess you just kind of got to weed out the bad apples and hang on to the keepers.
The advice we're being given is crap.
Now, Mark and Dayton also had a question for me. And he says, hey, Monty, how did it feel to play the Dynamo Festival in Holland? And Mark wants my honest answer. So, okay, I'll do my best to answer this honestly, Mark, and I would have to say it was awesome.
I bet it was!
Yeah, that was back in the 90s when Galactic Cowboys was on tour for, I believe it was Machine Fish. And Metal Blade sent us to the Dynamo Festival in Holland, and there was about 20 or 30,000 people there. And it was a total metal fest. Slayer was headlining one night. And we played the same day as Stuck Mojo and Voivod. And I think we went on around noon, and it had been raining, but just before we went on, it stopped. And it was just a sea of people, and we go walking out onto the stage, and I can hear Wally start playing the opening riff for Stress. And Alan kicks in the drums, and I jump up in the air to hit my first note, and when I land, no sound is coming out of my cabinets.
No!
Yeah, I'm in front of more people than I've ever played for in my life, and there's nothing coming out.
No!
And so I just run over to the side of the stage, and my roadie Bob hands me a new cord. I plug it in, and just start going at it.
Woohoo!
But here's the deal. If you ever find yourself playing in front of about 20,000 people and something like that happens, first thing is don't panic. The second thing is just act like nothing happened. Chances are the audience doesn't know what's going on anyway. So just keep rocking and have an awesome time playing the Dynamo Festival. Here now is a segment that's a whole lot like Monty's Listening Corner, only this one is called Rapid Fire CD Reviews. Yep, I'm going to review some new CDs that have come out over the last few months, and I'll play a few bites off of each one and give you some of my thoughts, and then you can make up your own mind. But as always, I will pull no punches and spare no feelings. Why? Because it's the kind of brutal honesty you've come to expect from me.
Cheap shot artist.
So let's get it going, and the first thing on my list is some new pop punk from a band I really like called 4 Years Strong. Strong is from Massachusetts, and they're these big old guys that have really cool beards and play Telecasters. And I've seen them a couple of times at Warped Tour, and they were always good. And Rockcast listener Joseph Glenn just wrote me the other day and said that he had just seen them in North Carolina not too long ago, and he said they were great, and I'm going to take his word for it. And Joseph also wanted to know what I thought of this CD, and even though I've only heard it a couple of times, I like it. A lot of really catchy choruses, and when they do the harmony vocals, it always takes me to a special place. Next up is a new CD by German power metal band Helloween. Man, you heard me right. I didn't say Halloween. I said Halloween.
Yeah!
I saw these guys, God, it must have been over 25 or 30 years ago, on the Headbangers Ball Tour. And they were playing with somebody like Exodus and Anthrax, and I didn't really pay that much attention to them because I really wasn't into them. And all these years later, I'm still not that into them. But they're actually kind of a guilty pleasure for me once in a while because some of their music actually kind of rocks. The hard part is just getting by some of the lyrics and some of the goofy metal cliches. I may end up dragging this CD to the trash bin of my computer, but I thought I'd play a little bit of it because I figured there were at least one or two people out there going, Halloween, hella awesome.
Hell yeah!
Next is the new CD by The Darkness called Last of Our Kind. They've always been kind of a cross between AC/DC and Queen. And I loved their first album, but it's kind of been hit and miss since then. The question is, what will I think of this one? There's a lot of things I like about The Darkness, but to me they're kind of like an unreliable designated hitter in baseball. Once in a while they'll hit a home run and get your hopes up, but generally they're just swinging and missing. They hit it out of the park with the first song, Barbarian, but after that they just didn't seem to get it done. I was hoping for some really killer choruses, but I'm just not hearing it. However, I did get great choruses on the new CD by We Came As Romans. I love this band, and their new album is chock full of hooks.
To bring this back to a proper goal.
You know, I know everyone doesn't like the Cookie Monster vocals, but if it's possible for someone to scream melodically, the guy in We Came As Romans does just that. He's very rhythmic with what he does, and instead of just making a bunch of noise over the guitars, what he does actually adds to the song.
Ready to contend, ready to withstand, I put up these walls, not to give you up. Nothing you say can make me give up. I'm persistent like a river, cause through a rock can't be crushed and I won't give in. I'm as steadfast as I've always been. Still the walls stand high.
That's We Came as Romans. It's a really good CD, and I don't want anybody emailing me telling me that that guy sounds like Sam Kinison, because he doesn't. All right, next is a singer that sounds a lot like John Bush, and it's because it is John Bush. He's back with his old band Armored Saint, and they've got a new CD called When Hands Down. That's a good song, and of course, I was on tour with John Bush back when he was with Anthrax, so I guess I could say John Bush is a friend of mine.
I'm impressed.
So it's going to be hard for me to say anything bad about this album.
Well, yeah.
Then again, I haven't seen or talked to John in about 19 or 20 years, so what do I care? I mean, I'd love to say it was amazing, but this album's okay. John Bush has a great voice, and Armored Saint's a really good band, but this didn't really blow me away. But, you know, if John wants to drop me an email sometime between now and, say, January, I might just add it to my top albums of the year.
I see what you're doing.
And finally, the last CD I'm going to review is from Mark Tremonti. And, of course, everyone knows him as the guitar player for Creed, and then he was in Alter Bridge, and now he's doing a solo thing called Tremonti. However, he's still in Alter Bridge, whose singer is Miles Kennedy, who is presently on tour with Slash. So while Tremonti was waiting for Miles Kennedy to get off tour, he did this album and used Wolfgang Van Halen on bass. But then Wolfgang had to go on tour with Van Halen, so now Tremonti has somebody else, and, you know, who really cares?
Nobody!
The fact is, I always hated Creed, and this new CD from Tremonti is basically just douche rock. But it does have some cool riffs in it, and if you, for some reason, love Alter Bridge, Creed, or anything like that, you'll probably really like this album. We'll be right back. So there you go. There's some rapid-fire CD reviews for you. If you like anything you heard, well, go buy it or steal it off the internet. It's really up to you. Alright, I'm gonna finish up the show with some odds and ends. And first of all, what's on TV? Well, I'll tell you. The other night I'm surfing through the channels and I see this football game. And I think, who's playing football in June? And I keep watching and I see that it's something called the LFL, which, get this, stands for the Lingerie Football League.
I think you're making this up.
No, I'm completely serious. These are women in basically bras and panties playing tackle football.
Well, you have my attention now.
Yeah, who knew? And I would say that some of the girls were kind of hot, but there's something about chicks in shoulder pads, helmets, knee pads, and wearing mouthpieces that doesn't really do it for me.
Not so much.
For the most part, it was completely stupid and a waste of time, but I'll be damned if I didn't sit there through the whole second half.
You're a sexist.
I was also on YouTube the other day, and I saw the best video ever. You may have seen this too, because it's kind of gone viral. It takes place at a public school, and it's obviously some kid videoing it on his phone. And you see this big chubby kid standing there, and he's obviously the nerd of the school that everybody picks on. And all of a sudden this kid walks up, it's about half this guy's size, and this little twerp looks about 12 years old, and he just hauls off and punches this big kid right in the face. But the big kid just stands there and acts like, yeah, well, whatever, this happens all the time. And the little kid just starts dancing around, acting like he's a badass, and wheels off and punches this kid in the stomach. And there's some other kids just standing around watching this happen, when all of a sudden the big kid decides he's had enough, and he just reaches over, picks this little dick up in the air, and slams him to the ground.
Yeah!
And the big kid didn't do anything else, and you just see this little weasel trying to pick himself up, and he's hobbling around like his leg's broken. And I just started hysterically laughing, because I got picked on when I was in junior high, and that's what I wished I could have done to every bully. Except if I would have been that big kid, I would have kept stomping that little butthole's face into the concrete. But he didn't. He just basically broke the kid's ankle and then just walked away. And I thought that was awesome.
It was a joy to watch.
So make sure you look that up on YouTube, because it is indeed the best video ever.
Absolutely magnificent.
Okay, Father's Day is coming up, and I hope all you dads out there have a good one. And I always think about my dad this time of year, because he was a great one. I mean, sure, if he was still alive, he'd be that guy in the express lane at the supermarket writing a check. And he'd still have one of those rotary phones. And he still wouldn't have a computer, and he'd still be asking me what an email was. But there's not a day that goes by that I don't wish I could call him up and say hi. Because every Sunday during football season, I'd call him up to say, "Hey, Dad, how about that game?" And he'd always answer like he was out of breath, like he ran to the phone. And I'd say, "Dad, why didn't you just let the answering machine get it? That's why I bought that for you." And he'd say, "Oh, that's okay. I still haven't figured out how to use that thing." But even though my dad refused to enter the age of technology, he did all the things that a dad's supposed to do. He loved me, he tried to teach me right from wrong, and when I grew up and got signed to a record deal, he became my biggest fan. So much so that he wanted to be in charge of Galactic Cowboys merchandise mailouts. And it was something he just did for free because he wanted to. And a lot of you guys who ordered t-shirts will remember that many times he would put in a handwritten letter with your order. And he'd thank you for being fans of Galactic Cowboys. And I even found out he was sending a lot of the orders out priority mail. And I'd say, Dad, you really don't have to do that. You can just send them regular mail. And he'd go, no, I just want them to get there as quickly as they can. And that's the kind of good guy that Bud Colvin was. And so remember your dad this Father's Day, and if he's still alive, tell him you love him.
That's the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about anything.
Don't forget to go to my website, MontyColvin.net, and order yourself a Rockcast t-shirt. And a special shout-out to all the guys who have ordered so far. Thanks to Alan Stollard, Patrick Wolf, Jeffrey Elliott, Emmett Hall, Joseph Glenn, Randy in Wisconsin, and Stu. I really appreciate your support, and I appreciate all you guys for listening.
Yeah, I know, you've said that.
I'm going to play you a song from one of my favorite bands ever. And no, it's not what you think. It's not the Beatles. It's not Thin Lizzy. No, it's Seosin. I love every single thing about this band and their albums. From the songwriting, to the vocals, to the guitar parts that they play. And this drummer is one of my favorite drummers of all time. And his name is Alex Rodriguez.
Huh?
Yeah, you heard me right. Alex Rodriguez. The steroid-taking, home-run-hitting all-star from the New York Yankees is also the drummer for Seosin.
You are such a liar.
Yeah, I did kind of make that up, but his name is Alex Rodriguez, and he's a great drummer.
You're a bald-faced liar.
So enjoy this song by Seosin, and I will talk to you soon. But until then, this has been Monty saying take care, don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me, and
rock on.
Oh,
This has been Monty's Rockcast.
That song was pretty good. Yeah, I liked it.